Thank you so much. And I'm really, really happy to be here in West Virginia. This state has a long relationship with my family. My uncle, John Kennedy, would not have been president of the United States if it weren't for West Virginia, if it weren't for the people of West Virginia. So there's a deep bond of affection between my family and between the people of this state. And, you know, I want to address these coal trucks and also the miners who I just visited with over there and who presented me with this flag. And I want to remind all of us that today is Pearl Harbor Day, that West Virginians have a proud legacy that Washington knew about, that Lincoln knew about during the Civil War, that we've known in every war, that there's more enlistments from West Virginia. Per capita than any other state, there's more Medal of Honor winners from West Virginia than any other state, and there's more veterans per capita than any other state. And many of them enlisted in World War II on Pearl Harbor Day. I have members of my family who also enlisted and who died during that war. And they came home, and my Uncle Joe was killed during that war. My Uncle Jack was wounded badly during that war and came home with the West Virginia veterans. And they came home, they had fought in a war so that we could have a country where we had democracy, where we had dialogue, where people would, where we had transparency in government, where we had transparency among people. A government, a country that was not ruled by mob, by people shouting each other down, using big machines to drown people out, and where people were not as frightened of dialogue, where people did not have that cowardice, where they could not have a dialogue with their opponents and talk about issues together. And that's what this country stands for. That's what those proud West Virginians died for. That's what my Uncle Joe died for, and what my father and my Uncle Jack fought for during World War II. My father came back from a trip to Appalachia once when I was a little boy, and he said to me, you know, this is the second poorest state in our country, and yet it should be the richest. It has the finest resources in all of America. And why is it, he wondered, could it be the poorest state? And why is it that the counties of West Virginia that have the most coal are the poorest counties in the state? And that is because of the tyranny of an industry that is now liquidating the state for cash, literally, tearing down the mountains. Now, most of you are from the state of West Virginia. I'm not from the state of West Virginia, but I have also experienced a diminishment in my life and my children and their lives because of this industry. In the state of New York, I buy a fishing license for $30 every year. And yet, in almost every water body in the state, I can no longer eat the fish because they're contaminated with mercury from coal-burning power plants. The National Research Council, which is the arm of the federal government, and the National Academy of Sciences has just published a report that in which they found, after studying 300 randomly chosen rivers and water bodies around the country, testing thousands and thousands of fish, that literally every freshwater fish in America is now contaminated with dangerous levels of mercury because of coal-burning power plants. One out of every six American women, according to CDC, now has so much mercury in her womb that her children are at risk for a grim inventory of diseases: autism, blindness, mental retardation, heart, liver, and kidney disease. There are 640,000 children born in this country every year who've been exposed to dangerous levels of mercury in their mother's womb. I got my levels tested, mercury, recently, just out of curiosity, and I found out that my levels, I eat a lot of fish, a lot of freshwater fish, and I spend a lot of my time fishing. I learned that my levels of mercury in my body are about 10 times the level that EPA considers safe. I was told by Dr. David Carpenter, who's the National Authority on Mercury Contamination, that a woman with my levels of mercury in her blood would have children with cognitive impairment, permanent brain damage. I said to him, You mean she might have? And he said, no, the science is very certain now. Her children would have some level of permanent neurological injury, probably at my levels, an IQ loss in those children of about 5 to 7 points. Well, that is one of the costs of coal that they don't tell you about when they say it's cheap and clean. We know that when they say it's clean, they're telling a lie, but they're also telling a lie when they say it's cheap. Because we're paying the cost elsewhere when they dispose of their waste in the air and the waterways of our country. I live 2 hours south of the Adirondack Mountains. This is the oldest protected wilderness in the face of the earth. It's been protected as forever wild since 1885. We had a right, the American people, to believe that generations of our citizens would be able to enjoy those pristine landscapes unspoiled. But today, 1/5 of the lakes in the Adirondacks is sterilized from acid rain that's coming from those same coal-burning power plants, and which has also, incidentally, destroyed the forest cover on the high peaks of the Appalachians from Georgia all the way up into northern Quebec. Well, that's one of the prices of coal that they don't tell you about when they say it's only 9 cents a kilowatt hour. They're not saying that they're also destroying all the private and public timber stands on the high peaks of the Appalachian, and that my family, because we go fishing, we go camping, we go kayaking in the Adirondacks, we go skiing, that those landscapes have been permanently diminished because of coal, and that's one of the costs that they don't tell you about. If you go to EPA's website when you go home today, you'll see a Harvard study on that website that shows that there's 60,000 Americans who die every year from breathing ozone and particulates that come from coal-burning power plants. There's another study that the Natural Research Council and the National Academy of Sciences just did that said at least 20,000 Americans die every year from ozone and particulates. 1 million asthma attacks, 1 million lost work days a year. Those are part of the cost of coal that they don't tell you about when they say it's only 9 cents a kilowatt hour. The huge health care costs were recently evaluated by the federal government, and they say it's close to $156 billion every year nationally from coal. Now, the University of Kentucky just did, I talked to some of the miners, my mining friends over there, and they say, well, this is bringing great prosperity to the state of West Virginia. But the University of Kentucky just did a study that showed to their state, and very similar here, there's no difference, that the cost of coal, there's a net cost, not a net profit to coal from the state, of $156 million a year. These are all part of the cost of coal that they don't tell you about when they say it's 9 cents a kilowatt hour. Now, I flew over the Cumberland Plateau recently, as I've done many times over the past 15 years, and I saw something. Long as you love coal, long as you love the mountains. I saw something that all of you have to live with. I saw something that if the American people could see it, there would be a revolution in this country. We are cutting down the Appalachian Mountains, these historic landscapes where Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett roamed that are so much a part of American culture. And I was telling this to some of my friends from the coal industry just a few minutes ago, the place that I live in Mount Kisco, New York, during the Pleistocene Ice Age 20,000 years ago, there were 2.5 miles of ice over the place where my home stands right now. And all of North America became a tundra. The trees were gone everywhere. It was just grasslands and tundra. The only place that the forests survived were in a tiny refugium in West Virginia and Eastern Kentucky in these Appalachian Mountains. And when the glaciers withdrew 12,000 years ago, the entire North America was reseeded from the seed stock in these mountaintops. These are the mother forests of all of our country, of all of North America. And as a result of that, they are the richest ecosystem in the hemisphere. There's more biodiversity per cubic meter than any other place in the hemisphere. And today, Massey Cole is succeeding in doing what the glaciers couldn't do, which is to cut down and flatten these landscapes and destroy these ancient forests that have, you know, I always say, this is a moral issue. We don't have a right to destroy something that we cannot recreate. It was God who made these mountains, and it's Don Blankenship who is cutting them down. And wave your flag if you love the mountaintops. Now, when I saw, you know, I flew over a drag line, these machines that are 20 stories high. It cost $500 million to build one machine. They practically dispense with the need for human labor, which indeed is the point. When my father was fighting strip mining in Appalachia back in the 60s, I remember a conversation that I had with him when I was 14 years old, where he said to me, they're not just destroying the environment, they're permanently impoverishing these communities because there's no way that they can regenerate an economy from these barren moonscapes that are left behind. And he said to me, they're doing it so they can break the unions. And that's exactly what they did. When he told me that, there were 46,000 unionized mine workers in the state of West Virginia digging coal out of tunnels in the ground. Today, there are fewer than 11,000 miners left in the state. About half of them are unionized because the strip industry isn't. And they're taking more coal out of West Virginia than they were in 1968. The only difference is, back then, at least some of that money was being left in the state for salaries and pensions and reinvestment in the community. Today, virtually all of it goes straight out of the state towards Wall Street to the headquarters of Massey Coal, Arch Coal, Peabody Coal, and to the big banking houses like Morgan, Citibank, and Bank of America, which own these operations, which they obtained from people who swindled them from the people of West Virginia back in the 1880s. And they are literally liquidating this state for cash, using these giant machines and 2,500 tons of ammonium nitrate explosives. They detonate in Appalachia every single day. It's the equivalent of a Hiroshima bomb once a week. They're blowing the tops off the mountains to get the coal seams beneath. Then they take the rock and debris and rubble and they plow it into the adjacent river valley, and they bury the rivers and they bury the valleys. According to EPA, they bury 2,000 miles of America's headwater streams and rivers and streams. This is a crime. You cannot do that in the United States of America. The Clean Water Act, it's a violation of the Clean Water Act. You can't take rock and debris and rubble and dump it into a river or water body without a Clean Water Act permit. So my friend, one of the great heroes of this state, as big a hero as any of the heroes of the American Revolution, Joe Lovett, sued. And he won the suit in front of a conservative Republican federal judge, Judge Charles Hayden. And Judge Hayden, during that case, you know, he had a colonel from the Corps of Engineers who was issuing these illegal permits. And Judge Hayden himself questioned the colonel, and he said, how did you ever start issuing these permits which are so obviously illegal? And the Corps of Engineers colonel turned to him after a few minutes of silence. He said to him, I don't know, Your Honor, we just kind of oozed into it. Well, Judge Hayden issued a decision at the end of that case where he said exactly what I just said to you. It's all illegal. It's been illegal since day one, and he enjoined all mountaintop mining. But 2 days from when we got that decision, lobbyists for Peabody Coal and Massey Coal met in the back door of Gail Norton's Interior Department. Now, Gail Norton is currently under federal indictment. These aren't criminals we're dealing with. When I say that, use that word, I don't use it loosely. And they met with Gail Norton's first deputy chief, Stephen J. Griles, who's now serving a 10.5-month jail sentence in the federal penitentiary. But too late for the mountaintops. And Stephen J. Griles was a former lobbyist for Peabody Coal and Massey Coal. And together, in a backdoor, darkened room of the Interior Department, away from all the democratic processes, away from public participation, away from the transparency that democracy is supposed to guarantee to our citizens, they rewrote these crooked lobbyists and this crooked public official. Oh, can you love the mountains? Wave your flag if you love America and you love West Virginia and you love the mountains of West Virginia, which are the heart and soul of this country. You know, when I was a little boy, my father was trying to put in jail a corrupt leader from the teachers union named Jimmy Hoffa. Every day in front of my house, when me and my brothers and sisters were playing football on the front lawn, we had this happening. Big trucks coming by our property with their horns blaring and backfiring because they wanted to shut down a prosecution by intimidating us. But we're not intimidated by this. We're not intimidated by the fact that we have corrupt public officials who are running this state. Yeah! Because we know that we live in a democracy and that it's our job to reclaim this democracy for the people of this state and for the children of this state, to make sure we hand them a democracy and not a corrupt corporate plutocracy. Yeah! And chop down mountains. So, I'll give you 8 mountaintop removal. And if you love America, God must have given everybody a day off. Oh. So, these crooked lobbyists and the crooked government official rewrote the interpretation of one word of the Clean Water Act, the definition of the word fill. It changed 30 years of statutory interpretation and to effectively overrule Judge Hayden's decision and make it legal not just West Virginia, but every state in this country ostensibly to dump rock, debris, rubble, garbage, any solid material into any waterway in the United States. Now, a lot of these gentlemen I met over here said that they are fishermen and that they love fishing. Well, if that's true, why do they like it that it's made legal in this country to destroy the fisheries of this country? Yeah. And to destroy and to put rock and debris into our fishing system and our fishing holes? This is not something that America stands for. Now, this is why I always say, you know, the polluters and their indentured servants in our political process, the corrupt public officials, the agencies they've captured, they're slick PR firms like Burson Marcella, they're phony think tanks in Washington, D.C., and they're phony scientists, you know, who say it's okay to cut down mountains. We call them biostitutes. They say, and the people in this agency here who say the same thing, you know, all of these, they've been very adept over the past few years at saying, at marginalizing environmentalists and saying, environmentalists or tree huggers or radicals or militants or pagans who worship trees and sacrifice people. I heard it the other day. But there's nothing radical about the idea of clean air and clean water for our children. And the mountains that God made, leave them like they made them. And, you know, we're not fighting for the environment for the sake of the fishes and the birds. We're fighting for it because we understand that nature is the infrastructure of our communities. And that if we want to meet our obligation as a generation, as a civilization, as a nation, which is to create communities for our children, to provide them with the same opportunities for dignity and enrichment and prosperity and good health as the communities that our parents gave us, we've got to start by protecting our environmental infrastructure, the air we breathe, the water we drink, the wildlife, the fisheries, the public lands, the shared resources of our society, the commonwealth, the public trust assets, the things that are not susceptible to private ownership but by their nature are owned by all the people of the community. The rivers, the streams, the mountaintops that connect us to our past, to our history, that provide context to our communities, and that are the source ultimately of our values and our virtues and our character as a people. One of the things I said to the miners over here is that good environmental policy is identical to good economic policy. If we want to measure our economy based upon how it produces jobs and the dignity of jobs over the generations, over the long term, and how it preserves the value of the assets of our community. If, on the other hand, we want to do what Massey Coal and the big industry wants us to do, which is to treat the planet as if it were a business in liquidation, convert our natural resources, including the state of West Virginia, to cash as quickly as possible, have a few years of pollution-based prosperity, we can generate an instantaneous cash flow and the illusion of a prosperous economy, but our children are going to pay for our joyride. And they're going to pay for it with denuded landscapes and poor health and huge cleanup costs that are going to amplify over time and that they will never, ever be able to pay. Environmental injury is deficit spending. It's a way of loading the costs selfishly, selfishly, selfishly of our prosperity onto the backs of our children. And one of the things I've done over the past 2.5 decades as an environmental advocate is to constantly go around and confront this argument that an investment in our environment is a diminishment of our nation's wealth. It doesn't diminish our wealth. It's an investment in infrastructure, the same as investing in telecommunications and road construction. It's an investment we have to make if we're going to ensure the economic vitality of our generation and future generations. Now, somebody said that I said this was a criminal activity, and it is a criminal activity, and I don't use that word lightly, and I was a prosecutor, and I know what it means, and I know the implications. But when you violate environmental law, and they are violating the environmental laws, clearly every day, I just came Donna Lisenby, the Appalachian River Keepers, from showing from their own records, DEP's records, 10,000 violations of water quality standards against this industry over the past 10 years. 10,000 violations that they know about and that have not been enforced against. Why? Because the agency has been captured. Well, this is real crime. These are dangerous elements and chemicals and poisons that they're putting in our river system. Selenium, arsenic, lead, mercury. Now, this is real crime. With real victims. If there's a pregnant mother and she eats a fish that's contaminated with lead or arsenic or selenium, and or a little girl who eats that stuff in a fish, and that little girl gets to fifth or sixth grade and she can't solve a math problem as fast as she ought to be able to solve it because she has that kind of brain injury that those chemicals are known to impose on little children and growing fetuses, and she can't read a book as quickly as her classmates could, and she has to deal with the embarrassment and the humiliation and the diminished aspirations and the injury to her self-esteem that's caused by her not being able to do those things that, you know, God gave her the brain to solve that math problem and to read the book. And Don Blankenship and his greed took it away from her. Now, you could rob 100 banks and you wouldn't be committing a crime as heinous and as awful as that crime. And you tell me if I'm wrong about that. Now let me ask you something else. If a foreign enemy of our country or a foreign terrorist organization came to this country and poisoned every fish in our country with mercury, and poisoned one out of every six American women with mercury, and poisoned, as the CDC says, 640,000 American children every year with a brain-killing poison, what would you call those people? What would you call that act? And what if they exploded 2,500 tons of ammonia nitrate explosives in one of the most beautiful states on earth every week? What would you call them? So this is an issue. It's an issue of crime and getting away with it because you have the political clout to go into these agencies and capture them, and to use our campaign finance system, which is just a system of legalized bribery, to control these crooked politicians in the state capitals on Capitol Hill. And it goes to the heart of who we are as a people, and it goes to our democracy. And destroying these wilderness areas is something that all of us, every American, should be offended by, because our country is so connected to wilderness. This is who we are. From the beginning of our national history, our great spiritual leaders and moral leaders and political leaders and cultural leaders were telling the American people, you don't have to be embarrassed or ashamed because you don't have the 1,500 years of culture that they have in Europe. Because you have this relationship to the land, and particularly wilderness, which is the undiluted work of the Creator. And that's going to be the source of your values and your virtues and your character as a people. And if you look at every valid piece of American, classic American literature, whether it's Melville or Hawthorne or Mark Twain or Jack London or F. Scott Fitzgerald, the unifying theme, our literature, our poetry, the unifying theme is that nature is the critical defining element of American culture. And the Reverend who was just up here made a very, very important point, that this is where God talks to us. This is where we sense the divine. If you look throughout the history of mankind, through every religious tradition, the central epiphany always occurs in the wilderness. Buddha had to go to the wilderness to experience nirvana and self-realization. Muhammad had to go to the wilderness of Mount Hera in the year 629 to wrestle the angel Gabriel and have the Quran squeezed from him. Moses had to go to the wilderness of Mount Sinai alone to find the commandments for the first time. Jesus Christ had to go to the wilderness for 40 days alone to discover his divinity for the first time. His mentor was John the Baptist, who lived in a cave in the Jordan Valley and dressed in the skins of wild beasts and ate locusts and honey. And all of Christ's parables were taken from nature. I am the vine, you are the branches, the mustard seed, the little swallows, the scattering the seeds in the fallow ground, the lilies of the field. He called himself a fisherman, a farmer, a vineyard keeper, a shepherd. The reason he did that, and the reason all the Old Testament prophets and the Quranic prophets and the Upanishad prophets, all the way back to the pagan prophets like Aesop, all of them used parables and allegories and fables drawn from nature to teach us the difference between right and wrong, to teach us the wisdom of the Creator and what God looks like, what he wants us to do. And the reason they did that is because that's how they stayed in touch with the people. Christ was saying things that offended people, that contradicted everything they'd heard from the wealthy, established people of their time. He was saying that it's harder for a rich man to go to heaven than it is for a camel to go through the eye of a needle. This offended people. It offended all of society. And they would have dismissed him as a quack, but they were able to confirm the wisdom of his parables through their own observations of the fishes and the birds. And when we destroy our wilderness in this country, we destroy part of our own humanity, and we destroy part of our ability to sense the divine. So this is not just an economic issue. This is not just an environmental issue. This is not just an issue about democracy. It's all of those things, but it's also a moral issue. And we have an obligation to our Creator, to our country, to our children, to make sure that it stops at Coal River Mountain, and we, from then on, it never happens again. We are the soldiers and the army. Thank you very much. God bless America, and God bless West Virginia.